Blog Talk Radio.
WIJSF.com. Women in Jazz South Florida, Inc. is a nonprofit educational organization that promotes women musicians globally through events, concerts, performances, clinics, lectures, workshops, articles, interviews, newsletters, courses, contacts, research, history, archives, websites, film, audio and video recordings, and recognition. Visit us at WIJSF.com. You're listening to blogtalkradio.com/musicwoman with your host, Diva JC.
We're filming today in San Diego for the Hamilton.
And that was my mentor. I don't care what the rest of you do. This lady has saved my mental health for about the last 10 years. Every time I call her. Anyway, hi, this is Dr. Diva JC. And today we are going to have our National President Libra Sene interview my mentor, Jeannie Cheatham, Meet Me With Your Black Drawers On, about her life in music and her book. So I'm going to bring them in. Hi, Libra.
Good afternoon. How are you, Dr. Jones?
I'm just fine. In the midst of
the good and
sanity,
queen, Jeannie Cheatham. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm fine, thank you.
I'm so happy to have
Hi,
you
Dr.
back.
Jane.
Hi, Jeannie, my favorite person.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it's such a pleasure to have you back to chat with you. Our last conversation was so inspiring. So I was really looking forward to talking to you again. You inspired me so much. So now I'm waiting for my copy of my ebook of Meet Me With Your Black Drawers On. And I wanted you to talk to us about it a little bit. What inspired you to write a book titled after your biggest hit song? Could you give us a little insight on that?
Well, it didn't start out that way. Actually, I was real mad because of the way Big Mama Thornton was treated, you know? And because I played for Big Mama many times. And I remember when she had that hit, You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then along came Little Elvis with his promoter, and they actually wiped out her record being played on the radio. During that time, they had a lot of payola and stuff, you know. And if you had a hit, well, it was covered by some other person that they wanted to really push. They'd wipe you out. You just couldn't get yourself played. And that's what happened to Big Mama's career.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about it and thought about it all through the years. And I said, Big Mama wasn't treated right because they never, like the Beatles, always give a recognition to the blues singers they took the music from. But Elvis did not say Big Mama's name, unless I could be wrong, but I never heard say that, well, because of Big Mama making this record a hit, this music, I am where I am today. So I said, I'm going to write about Big Mama. I started out writing. First thing I knew, I was letting some friends read it, and I let Jimmy read it. He said, do you know you're writing a book. I said, I am? and that's the way it started, because of retribution for us, trying to make some truth come out of Big Mama's travail.
Very interesting. Well, you know, and that lead us to the point that it's important for us to tell our own stories.
That's true.
It's very, very vital that we tell our own stories. And I know the stories that you painted just verbally for us, our last conversation was really fascinating. So I know the book is going to have us all wrapped up in some of your adventures. Who, besides Big Mama Thornton, who are some of the other people that you work with that you feel influenced you, even earlier in your childhood even?
Well, you know, somebody gave me the gift of a little portable radio, one of the first ones, and I used to listen to it under the cover late at night. And I heard a vocalist. Her name was Lee Wiley, and you probably never heard of her. But, boy, when I heard her sing, I said, gee whiz, I like that. And then later I found out that she loved Billie Holiday. So then I gradually got around to Billie Holiday. So between the two of them, Lee Wiley and Billie Holiday, it really sort of pushed me over into the jazz world, because I was taking really classical lessons at that time from an Englishman named Reginald Riley. And he was from London, England. He gave me my first – I took for him – took studied privately with him for about 10 years. And so I wasn't playing jazz or anything except church. Now, when I started playing in church, I was about 5. So between the church playing, you know, by ear, really, because, you know, somebody in the back would strike up a song, and you'd have to find the key real quick and catch on and start playing. So it sort of stretched your ears. So between that and the private lessons and listening to that radio late at night, it sort of put me in a mood to be a musician.
Very interesting. So was it Billy in particular that pushed you towards jazz?
I think it was necessity, because I really wanted to be an artist. And in my life, I was a pretty good artist, and I did portraits very well. And I went all through school, grade school and high school. And so some of my work, they were going to display in the biggest department store in town on Main Street. And I won a scholarship to the Art Institute of Akron. But when I showed up to pick it up, the prize at the department store, they found out I was black, and they said, we think we made a mistake, and perhaps you would rather have an outfit, but we pick out any outfit in the store you want. Boy, I was so mad, I cried all the way home. I remember walking home and stumbling home, because we walked down to it wasn't too far from downtown. And I broke the heel on my shoe, and my nose was running and my eyes were running. I said to myself,
oh my God.
I said, I'm going to not be an artist. I'm not going to be an artist. I said, what I'm going to do is play the music, because I can control my own destiny. I knew I would have more control than with art. So that's what really pushed me into here we go again with anger. And righteous anger.
Wow. That seems to be our story, huh?
Yes. Yes. But I'm glad it did, because, you know, I probably would be a 92-year-old lady sitting in the garret with paintbrushes all by myself, with long, straggly hair and a bump on my nose.
Oh, no. We couldn't have that, but we're so happy that you did. We are so happy that you didn't do that. What I was curious, really curious about, is that, you know, I asked you this before, but if you could get, like, in a little bit more detail about your creative process. You know, I know that you pulled from the infinite, but I was curious if you, you know, just what do you do when you feel the music coming on you?
Getting ready for a gig, you mean? Because that's where you learn. That's where you learn. Because most of the time I eat very early. It's almost physical process at first. I eat very early, and I try not to talk or let anything interfere with my getting ready to go to work. And by the time I get on the gig, I'm ready to get on that stage because it is a process. You breathe different. You kind of be quiet to yourself, and you kind of take in, like the old people say, old musicians say, you got to take it in so you can put it out.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I would do. And it's hard to tell you word for word what that process is, but it is sort of going internal. And you really can't – I never could eat before I played. A lot of guys could eat a steak and then jump up on the stage and blow snakes. But I never could do that. I have to eat about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'm clear, you know. And that's the way it works.
I see. Jeannie, did you always sing, or were you just playing piano for a while?
Well, most of the time I was playing for other people, other than church. And we would just like I told you, Lee Wilde and Billie Holiday influenced me. But the guys that played behind them, like Lester Young and all, you know, I listened to those horn players. And we got into listening to bebop with Charlie Parker and big bands like Count Basie. And sure enough, when I took off and started playing in clubs, it very quickly became the house band. At that time, they had house bands that would play for other artists and the MC and the dancer, usually a dancer that took off all her clothes. Lost most of them.
Okay.
So the house bands, we had a chance to stay in a club maybe 5-6 months, you know. And one of the first house bands was right in my hometown. This guy named Booker Brooks on Howard Street in Akron. And he, at that particular time, I played for a woman. I'll never forget her. She was a contortionist. Her name was Caledonia. And she was about 70 years old, which is weird. But people came and filled that club up to watch her get on the floor and put her foot behind her head, and she'd do. We'd play fast jazz music while she's doing it. You know, the band's playing away, and she's doing really slowly, putting her leg behind her head and look between the legs, and, you know, a beautiful contortion, and she made it so artistic, and she was a wonderful lady. And we also played for a guy named the Great Bender. Now, the Great Bender was also a contortionist. It's almost like having circus indoors in a funny way. But the Great Bender was different from Caledonia in the fact that he would sit on the floor and put both legs behind his head, and then he'd take a glass of whiskey and drink it, and then he'd eat the glass. This is true.
Wow.
And we played for a young man named blind fellow named Al Hibbler. I don't know if you all remember him or not, but he was a great baritone singer, very almost dramatic in his singing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, house band, we went to Columbus, Ohio, to Mr. Flint's Trocadero. And there we played for Larry Darnell. Remember the song? I don't know if you remember the song. For you, my love, I'd do most anything. We played for Wynonie Harris, who was Papa Joe Jones' cousin. And he had a hit called Don't Roll Those Bloodshot Eyes at Me. I can tell you've been out on a spree. But in the intermissions, Wynonie Harris turned into a palm reader and psychic. He put on his turban at intermissions and read people, charge people to read the palms and tell the, he was very good too. He was no joke. And so, I think that kind of experience from playing for all kinds of acts and all kinds of people made me very sharp as far as listening and catching up on changing keys when they sing off and just doing show business in general, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that sounds like a exciting film to me.
It was.
But tell
me.
I could see that on the screen.
Yeah.
But tell me, when did you actually start singing? You know, when did you become a singer as well as pianist?
Well, actually, not till we got here on the West Coast in around 1980.
Wow.
Really. I'm 92. I've been playing since I was five, and I was always playing for somebody else until about around the 80s when we start driving out here to the West from New York City with a little stop in Wisconsin where we taught at the University of Wisconsin, both of us. And I told my husband, I said, you know, I said, I'm 50 years old, which I was. August 14th, we arrived in L.A., and I was 50 years old, my 50th birthday. And I said, you know, I said, we can play jazz all we want to, and I love it. I said, but times are changing, and I don't want to be in anybody. There's no more house bands. Nobody's going to see this kind of act. I said, so we have to decide what we're going to do for the rest of our life. He said, well, what'll that be? I said, the only thing I know that lasts through every change of music and everything is the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew how to play the blues because I had played for all these people like Wynonna Harris and little Jimmy Scott and Jimmy Russian and, Big Maybelle and Jimmy Witherspoon. I played for all these singers. But the blues singers seemed to last. So I said, so I kept that in the back of my mind that's what we would kind of feature, you know. So that's what made us change track. Although my husband was still doing a lot of writing and stuff in Hollywood.
Okay, so that's what got you singing. Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you were 50 at that time.
50 years old when we came out here on the West Coast in 1977.
Yeah, that's wonderful, and that's a wonderful message also to show you that it's never too late. It's never too late.
You can always learn something new about yourself.
Yes.
That you have all these, like you always have these jewels in a necklace, you know, and each one of them is a different thing, and each one of them can add to your life, and so... I had played for all these blues singers, so I knew all their songs. So I just decided.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fabulous singer. That's interesting, and you know what? That leads into really what's happening now in the world, because people are finding that they have to reinvent themselves in some way.
There you go.
With the coronavirus, you know, we're not all able to get out.
And the electronics.
Shows. Yeah.
These electronics changed the whole picture, you know, with Beyonce and all these people. All they, you know, they do little movies when they do music. They don't just do music. They're little movies.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
they produce these shows where they can do their thing against a backdrop of all this stuff. You know, dancers. All the same line dancers that we played for in the 40s, now they have in video.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see that? You see that connection?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
See?
So it goes to show that as artists, we have to learn to be versatile and willing to reinvent ourselves.
That's true.
Tell me, if you had a choice of any artist, old or new, that that you would like to collaborate with? Is there anybody that you find really interesting now that you wouldn't mind doing a song or two with?
You're going to make a big hole in this show because right now I can't think of.
Okay, that's okay.
I can't really think of anyone.
Okay.
It's too bad because most of the people that I play for, like Dakota Staton and the Orioles and Little Jimmy Scott and Jimmy Rushin and all those
mm-hmm.
people,
they're gone.
And I wouldn't know how. I don't know. I really have. Now, that's something for me to think about.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm thinking somebody younger, I like a lot of the younger singers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do what they do, but they can't do what I do.
Uh-huh. See, that's where the lessons come in.
Uh-huh. That's where the problem is, see. They're doing. They don't know. They have no idea what it takes to do what we do.
Yeah, but you could teach and give by example. You know, because what you do is real music.
Well, there is no real music to them. For every generation has its own contribution, I think, to the art world.
Yeah.
I don't care what. You know, it may not. We may not have. You know, we may not be able to find a song from this era that Beyonce sang that will last past 2025.
Mm-hmm.
You think about it. You can't, because you can't hum. You can't. The broader audience is not going to sing them. And so, but you still like Stardust, and you still like Black Drawer. But for some reason, it's almost become a flagship number to end people's shows, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of country people sing Meet Me With Your Black Drawer. I see it all the time on iTunes and all those, the computer, you know. And I see it on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
A lot of country guys, you know, sing Black Drawer. They make their own version of it, but they do it. So, but you can't find too many artists that I can think of, except probably, I can't think right now. I'm trying to think of songs that last, you know, that cross the generations.
Yes.
So these kids are doing their own thing, which is good.
Yeah,
once in a while somebody will come up with a song that forever, it's hard. It's hard to find.
Yes, it's not as many as it used to be. What is one of your favorite songs that you sing?
I think I like What Do We Do For Fun. That's one of them. It's because it's most of all the songs are taken from A Slice of Life, and I think that one is sort of one of my favorites.
Uh-huh. Besides Meet Me With Your Black Drawers, is there any particular story in the book, you know, that you think is really funny, or
they're all,
you know,
funny.
What's the
I'm going to tell you the truth. See, we lived our lives, everything from Ohio, the Middle West, is a storytelling area. And I didn't realize that till after I wrote the book, and I was trying to think, but we always sat on the porch in the evening and drank sweet tea or lemonade, very sweet Alabama lemonade, and listened to the older people tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also the snow up to your chin every winter make you sit inside. You listen to stories. You tell each other things, and I think the Middle West really tops both any part of the country for that knack of telling stories. Plus, they always have to have a humorous twist or scare the heck out of us. My mother used to scare the heck out of us talking about the hopper yards coming at night.
Wow.
That's a goblin that hops a yard. They don't walk like regular folks. So she told us that when we were kids and scare us, you know. And so we've always grown up with stories. So it's sort of easy for us to do, you know, to have a style. I think the Middle Western, I think is that.
Okay, but being on the road with the guys in the band, you know, what's the most trouble you ever got in? You guys ever run into any incidents that really like, whoo, glad we got through that?
Oh, every night. every night, even before we leave, some of the guys, you know, they say, look, I said, we're leaving so-and-so. Okay, can you get a ticket for my girlfriend? I said, man, I'm not going to get a ticket for your girlfriend. I said, you have to buy the ticket for your girlfriend. I'd have to tell one or the other that before we even get out there. But we always had so much fun. And most of the guys in the band were college people, or they've been in Ray Charles' band. Curtis was in Ray Charles' band. Ricky Woodard was in Ray Charles' band. Hank Crawford was in Ray Charles. See, they were already trained. And in that yes. And the other guys were very good, and all of them could read. And they had this special thing. They could play anything, any style, country music. I could yodel. You know, we just love music, period. And so all of the guys were well-rounded. They didn't just stick to one style. They could play anything. And they played numerous instruments. All of the guys played all the reeds, like clarinet, bass clarinet, didgeridoo. My baritone player played that Australian instrument, didgeridoo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
So everybody in the band, we thank God, we seem to have attracted fellows that were pretty straight up. None of them used drugs. And not in the Sweet Baby Blues band. And most of them didn't drink.
I have to break in. This is Diva JC. We are down to the last 2 minutes.
Oh, we're.
We have to
having fun.
Oh, my goodness. You feel like I was in one of your living rooms.
that was so fast. I hope we're able to do this again.
I do.
I would love
to. But I want to ask a question, Libra. May I?
Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Who do you want to play young Jeannie Cheatham? You do not have to answer me now, but we need a movie about.
Yes.
Yeah. What's that? I forgot that girl's name. What's her name? Lauren something.
Lauren Hill.
Yeah, she. I like her.
Okay. Well, anyway, my darlings, we will be back in August for Jeannie's birthday.
Oh, great.
That's
okay.
Great. That's great.
In the meantime, I love you. Have a beautiful weekend, and I'll talk to you both soon.
Love you,
all
too,
right.
And thank you again.
It's been a pleasure. A never-ending pleasure.
Baby, meet me with your black dog. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.